Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to be back to share our love for some of our favorite stories. This season, we'll be exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're going back to Westeros.
Woo!
To cover the prequel to Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we have loved every moment of it. We're huge Game of Thrones fans, and we're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and learn about the history of this expansive world together with all of you.
This week, we're embracing all the hype around House of the Dragon. We'll be discussing the trailer, setting a bit of context for the story, and we'll talk about our expectations for the show. There will be spoilers, which should go without saying. If you've been listening to our podcast, there are always spoilers for Game of Thrones, even when we're not talking about Game of Thrones. But we'll also be discussing the trailer for House of the Dragon. So if you'd rather not hear anything about that or any of the stories from the book Fire and Blood or the history of Westeros, we will be talking about some of the material from there. So proceed with caution.
And in the words of the great Tywin Lannister, we have won! Because there will be adult content. So if you're here to ride the dragon twice, like our boy Aegon the Conqueror, who is all about the wedding and the bedding, a conqueror of customs before he even landed at the mouth of Blackwater Rush, then you have come to the right place. Let's go.
Wow. That was a deep cut. Rest in peace, Viserys.
Oh, man. So, let's talk about context. House of the Dragon will largely focus on the events of the Targaryen Civil War. So this civil war is known as the Dance of the Dragons. Also, the dying of the dragons.
There's going to be a lot of dying of dragons.
Yes.
Everyone should just prepare themselves.
Unfortunately.
It's very sad.
We start with 17, though.
Yes, but...
It's like 17.
Let's not talk about how many are left at the end of the show.
Well, by the time we get to Game of Thrones, we know there's none until Dany hatches 3 dragon eggs, but... In the story of the Dying of the Dragons, Dance of the Dragons, the war takes place roughly about 130 years after Aegon's conquest, and it's before the events of Game of Thrones, right? And it's basically a conflict that's based on Volume 1 of the Targaryen history, Fire and Blood. So why do you think they picked this moment in history, Andrea?
I mean... I think there's a couple of reasons, but it provides larger context for why Dany is all alone in Essos, and her dragons are so coveted because the world has not seen dragons in a long time, and there's an explanation for what happened to the dragons. There isn't really an explanation, I think, yet in the canon for what happened to the dragons after this conflict, right? This certainly reduces the number of dragons, but... when we see Dany's dragon eggs, and we'll talk a little bit about where we think those dragon eggs came from in a later episode, they are just stones, right? They're not hatching. So I think this gives us a little bit of context for how the Targaryens were able to rule the Seven Kingdoms, really six, but let's not dwell on that too much. Without, you know, losing for hundreds of years without losing their grip on it. And it was largely because they had weapons of mass destruction, which were dragons.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, like later on, in Game of Thrones, we hear talk about like, well, you know, the dragons shrunk and shrunk because they locked them up. Or there's lots of like theories around what happened to the dragons. And there's some things in history of Westeros, which we won't get into because we don't know where they're going to go with House of Dragon, like, you know, if they do successor shows after this with, like, you know, like Blackfyre Rebellion, all the stuff that happens, like, later. But the point is that this is it. This is like the pinnacle of the Targaryen dynasty's power before they start fighting each other and fuck it all up, right? So this is like after the conquest, after they've ruled for a while, now they're at the top, and this is like before they start fighting each other, which is really, I think, the only way they probably would have been brought down, because these dragons were so powerful, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that we see that they can hold on to the throne after, you know, most of the dragons are gone for at least another 100 years, right? Because when we get to a Game of Thrones, no one has seen any dragon for over 100 years. But the Targaryens have only been really gone for about 17 or so years. So I think that I totally agree with your assessment. Like, they could have just won. Like, once you win, just keep winning. Why are you fighting each other? It's absurd.
It's crazy. And I mean, you know, like, we'll talk about it more as we get into it, but, you know, we like, look at what happened in Valyria, the Doom of Valyria, and all of that. There was a lot of, they were not really a powerful house. And so there was a lot of infighting even amongst, you know, houses over in Valyria that maybe, you know, maybe it's just, you know, they've been beefing for a minute. They were fighting like early, since the very beginning, there was fighting going on. You know what I mean? About who was going to sit where, do what. So I don't know. Maybe it's just part of like the blood of the dragon to fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, even in our, you know, Western history, you see this brother turns against brother for the crown sort of thing play out over and over again in the monarchies of Europe. And you see that in like Egyptian history, right? Which is, you know, not exactly Western history, but is influenced by it and was influenced it. So I think that in terms of like power grabbing, it's not unbelievable, but these folks were just out of control. Like, y'all be prepared, a lot of Targaryens are going to die. it's a lot.
Oh, it's
like
a lot.
They're you know, other houses will also be involved. Obviously the Hightowers are super important in the story. We'll talk about that later in the episode. But this is a family feud. This is not like a multi-kingdom, multi-vassal lord sort of thing. This is really a family feud between two branches of the same tree. And, you know, if you read Fire and Blood, you will see that that happens a number of times in the Targaryen history. We're going to talk today about Aegon's conquest, just to kind of set the stage for how did these Valyrian folks end up in Westeros to begin with. And then in our another episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the kings that came after Aegon, but before this conflict. But this is a story that just keeps repeating itself. Like, history is always kind of cyclical in this story. And these fights over power, dragons, they never go away with the Targaryens.
Yeah, sometimes it's just over, like, you know, whether you have legitimate children or not. They don't even look right. Like, why are you looking like that? You know, I don't know. I don't know if your bloodline's pure. You know what I mean? Like, you're not a child of incest. Your bloodline is not pure. All right. Anyway, the thing I love, like, you know, you, some of our fans and listeners may have been like, hey, you guys did a whole run of period pieces, but I love what you said about how this calls back history. And, you know, George is on the record of saying that this conflict, if anybody's interested in like kind of tying the history to of the past and fantasy together, is based on the Anarchy, which we won't talk in depth about. But it's just an interesting tidbit that, like, you're right. Like, I think like a lot of these conflicts you can look at in fantasy and say, oh, wow, this really resembles what we see in our real world, you know, a lot of times. So House of the Dragon is based on Fire and Blood, and the history is told through several accounts. So what is cool and exciting about this is we're finally going to get to see kind of like, you know, what is the definitive account of events that are kind of like hinted at in this book, which is
yeah,
really
I think that's the thing that I'm excited about, because there's a few deaths that are explained in multiple ways, and I would like to see how those resolve, because they influence whether how you might feel about a different character. Because a lot of times a death will be attributed to a character, but then it'll say, oh no, but it was an accident, or it was actually this. And I'm interested in seeing how they resolve some of that. Because I feel like my girl Rhaenyra has been maligned by misinformation and fake news.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any, you know what I think what I've read is there's just no real, like, there's no like clear hero in this, you know, like I don't feel, which is pretty much how George writes anyway. But man, Rhaenyra has her moments where you're like really rooting for her, and then there's moments where you're just like, geez, man, like you kind of suck, you know? So
okay. The easy way to find a hero for yourself is to just do what I do. Just embrace the darkness, okay? Just decide you're going to like a particular character, even if they do some messed up stuff. It just makes life easier.
Oh, I've already done that. We already know who that is in my life. Naughty Dread. Dread. Corlys Velaryon from the Velaryon house. Dread, all right? The Velaryons. They came to conquer, you know, bring down not Babylon. Let's go. I'm telling you, like Corlys is gonna be my guy. I mean, in like there's accounts that we read and heard on other coverage that he read using for his part, the actor using Tywin's dialogue. Come on, man, you already.
Yeah,
know
as soon as I
guy.
Heard that, I was like, oh wow, Paul's gonna be on 10 with that.
100%. 100%. We are over here loving the Velaryons. So let's do this. We know that we're fans. Other people who are listening are probably fans like us who have read as well. But there are some people who listen that are, you know, maybe they only watch the show. Maybe they're not going to read Fire and Blood. Maybe they haven't read all of History of Westeros because I'm a nerd like that. And we both did that, right? So, like, why don't we, like, pull back a little bit and just talk about the beginning of Aegon's conquest and the reign of the dragons and how it began.
Yeah. Let's talk about this, because the Targaryens are not like every other family, and that's really important later in this story. Mm-hmm. So the Targaryens are pure Valyrian blood. I can't believe I'm saying that without irony, because the whole purity thing is a little weird.
Exactly.
And they were dragon lords of an ancient lineage and in old Valyria. 12 years before the Doom of Valyria, an event that I hope one day, even we'll if see. We get an animated version of it, mm-hmm. I need to see the Doom, mm-hmm. which was about 114 BC. So that's BC stands for before the conquest. Aenar Targaryen sold all his stuff.
Everything.
Packed up his kids, his wives, his mm-hmm. wealth, everything. Took the dragons, the dragon eggs. Everybody, and moved to Dragonstone.
So this is the for all you guys, like, if this happens, I'm moving to Canada. See, Aenar was about that life. You're not about it. Aenar was like, listen, I'm leaving. That's it. I'm done. Pack up the shit. Get the dragons. Let's go.
And he did this because his daughter, Daenys?
It's
Daenys.
Yeah.
Also known as the Dreamer, had foreseen the destruction of Valyria. She had a dream, and she was like, "Dad, we gotta go. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to leave Valyria." And he believed her. Which
I respect him for that. I respect him for believing the dream. Like, right? Like, Daenys could have been like, "Dad, I had a dream." Just around, he could have been like, you know, pat her on the head. Oh, come on, we'll be all right. But he like took it seriously, which is a running thread for these Targaryens, which is really cool. That he did.
Yeah, I always admired this part of the story because I think a lot of people would have been dismissive of this mm-hmm. dream, but he listens to her. And the Targaryens are always they're always kind of beholden to prophecy, which mm-hmm. you know, we saw
sometimes
how that
works
all
out for
ended.
Them, and sometimes not. Yeah. That much.
But this time the prophecy saved their lives.
Yeah.
They were far from being like, you know, the most powerful dragon lords. Like they were, you know, they were still wealthy and they definitely had the access to dragons, but they weren't powerful in Valyria. And the folks who stayed behind saw what they did by leaving and going to Dragonstone as being cowards. Mm-hmm. You know, it looked bad. Last laugh on those folks. Whoa. Because they never survived. The Targaryens were the only dragon lords to survive the doom.
Initially, is important to say, though, right at this point, that the Velaryons also survived because they were very close allies of the Targaryens. And that's important. That's an important, because they're also from Valyria, along with another house.
Right, but they weren't dragon lords, right?
But they weren't dragon lords. No, they were just sailors and they were traders. And so they are the only dragon, the Targaryens are the only dragon riders and dragon lords to survive. But two other houses that were friends to the Targaryens, who the Targaryens kind of set up to trade between Valyria and Dragonstone, you know, over in Driftmark and other places, they made it out sooner. Like, actually, the Velaryons made it to Driftmark before the Targaryens decided to, like, leave Velaryon altogether. So,
yeah, it makes sense. If you're going to flee somewhere, you're going to go, you know, to a land where your friends have settled and done well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's important once they arrive at Dragonstone is they mostly mind their own business. They're not really interested in all the drama of the kingdoms in Westeros. They basically live for a few generations before the conquest. And, you know, they trade with folks and stuff, but they're not interested in the politics of the realm.
They're fucking chilling. It's just one Argilac the Arrogant is a dickhead. Like, they were chilling. There was going to be no drama from the Dragon Lords. Here we go. We're getting into the meat of it. That's all I got to say.
And then here comes Aegon, who is known in history as Aegon the Conqueror, and will have many, 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 many characters named after him.
There's a lot of Aegons in this story.
There's a lot of Aegons.
Up to the end.
And his two sisters, Visenya, she's uber important to this story.
Yes, yes.
And Rhaenys, who is my favorite Targaryen always.
I like her a lot. And so did Arya. Arya Stark liked her a lot.
Yeah.
Too.
No, she I like Rhaenys. She's like a real, she's a good, she's like a genuinely caring person in a lot of ways, but also just like a genuine badass. Like, I like Rhaenys. She's good.
And they set the tone early. It seems like there's always like a stick in the mud Targaryen and then like a really cool ass, like, you know, I hang out with like the singers and the poets and I don't really like war Targaryen. I you know, like, it's just like crazy. Like, Visenya the first, Rhaenys the latter, you know, like, that's it. So, you know, again, Aegon, although named the Conqueror, wasn't really planning on conquering anything. He was kind of chilling in Dragonstone. They weren't really thinking about the West. All of a sudden, things start to break out. So the reign of King Aegon Targaryen began on the day that he landed on the mouth of the Blackwater Rush, beneath the three hills where the city of King's Landing would eventually stand. His coronation took place 2 years after Aegon's landing and well after the major battles of the Wars of Conquest. So before I say anything about the Wars of Conquest, I said, you know, Harren the Black, Argilac the Arrogant, these were two of the most feared, like, you know, kings in the Seven Kingdoms, right? They were just, everyone was shook. They didn't want to fuck with them at all. And these two didn't like each other. And Argilac the Arrogant was a little bit older. So being older, he was a little bit worried about Harren the Black, that he was going to eventually take his stuff. So this guy, Argilac, offers, you know, to, he basically says, hey, you know what, let me give you my daughter and then you can take these lands that actually belong to Harren the Black. And no big deal that they're his. Like, you could just take them anyway because you got dragons. And then, you know, you'll be able to marry my daughter. To which Aegon's like, bro, I got two wives already. In case you didn't know,
Two sisters and two wives. Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. They are one in the same.
They are one in the same.
We may have skipped the part where Aegon married both of his sisters.
Both. Both his sisters. Yes. And that was not custom. It was custom to marry one. But they say that, you know, he married Visenya out of duty and Rhaenys out of love or passion. And he, you know, he had, that was the way that it worked. You had to marry one. And normally you would marry the older sister. So he married both. So he's like, nah, I don't really need another wife. But he says, you know what? I'll take those lands if you throw in these other lands with them. And you know what? The wife that you're offering, why don't you go ahead and just Why don't you let Oris Baratheon? You may notice the name Baratheon. Yeah, he's like my half brother. And he's my homie. We've been friends since we were little kids. I love him. Why don't you let them get married? Argilek the Arrant hears that, gets upset, not going to let his daughter marry a bastard, you know, because Westeros has this thing about bastards. And he cuts off the hands of the freaking envoy and sends him back in a box. Why, Argilek the Arrogant? Like, the guy has dragons. What the fuck are you thinking? Like, he has three dragons.
I just want to give a shout out to our friend Alyssa, who in reading the book was like, the number of people who are willing to fight these dragons when they don't have any.
It's crazy.
Shocking. It's shocking.
It's insane.
It is very true. She was right. Like, these dragon lords will literally come and burn your castle, and you have no right to be upset at them. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we're gonna, and so it's just crazy, because had he just been like, cool, then Aegon comes and smashes on his enemy, Harren the Black, is in the middle of the land. Harren the Black, maybe he's crazy enough, because we're gonna get to him in a minute, to start a problem, but maybe he's not, right? And then you have your daughter married off to an ally, you got the dragons in between you and your enemy. You've made a peaceful situation, but no, he pushes the issue, sends back the hands. Aegon and his sisters call all of the banners. They call them all. They're like, call the banners. House Velaryon shows up. Other houses show up. And when they get there, they go into the sept. He's praying now, because he's not even a prayerful guy. They say he's not very religious. He's up here. He's praying. Like, listen. And he sends off the ravens. The message in the ravens is, bend the knee and I will let you keep your lands and your territory. There's only one king in Westeros now, and it's me, bitches. Okay, that's it. If you don't bend the knee, you're going to pay. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he's saying. So fast forward to them not bending the knee, to him landing in the Blackwater Rush, to him coming into the Riverlands, where Harren the Black was big mad and talking big shit. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that, until he's holed up into his castle, because he had spent his whole fucking life building this castle that he thought was impenetrable, but not to dragons. Fucking Balerion the Black Dread melted his towers like marshmallows. It was a fucking marshmallow roast. And you know who was on the skewer? Harren the Black and all of House Whore, all right? Those motherfuckers were the marshmallows.
I do have questions, though, because the way it's described in the book is like Valerian just basically unleashed fire for like days.
Yeah.
Do dragons need to like take breaks? Like, was he parched? Like, what happens to them? Do they need
to just roasted, chilled, roasted again, chilled, you know, like... This was so bad that, like literally, the whole house is wiped out. Harren the Black, who was the most feared of any king in all, like, talk about being like the doing it the right way. You know, they always say if you want to get at people, you punch the toughest, strongest person first. Like, if you're gonna go rush somebody, you're going into a bad situation. Aegon was like, "Who's your strongest king? Okay, I'm gonna melt that motherfucker and see what the rest of you guys do." Right, and he does. Like, he literally does, and. In aiding that, the Tully, House Tully, helped him in also basically going after the Ironborn that was part of, because the Ironborn and Harren the Black are related. And so he raises up after defeating Harren the Black, his whole house. He raises up the Tullys as the Lord Paramount of the Trident, and he forced the Ironborn to choose a new ruling house. And because the Ironborn are trash, of course, they pick the Greyjoys. They just, uh-huh. The Greyjoys. Like, we all know how that goes later on. Say no more. So let's get back to our boy, Argilek the Arrogant. I mean, he has the appropriate name, because this motherfucker said that.
It's a crazy name.
Like, yeah.
Argilek the Arrogant.
Mm. Yeah. He was offered Oris's. Oris to marry his daughter. He was offered the protection of House Targaryen, who doesn't even have, by the way, a sigil yet. That comes later after he gets on the Blackwater Rush and he gets crowned. They give him a sigil. They don't, because the old dragon lords didn't have a custom of sigils. So the actually that he doesn't receive the Targaryen sigil until he gets the crown and is ordained before these battles happen on the in King's Landing, in the makeshift King's Landing that he built. But that's neither here nor there. Argalek the Arrogant was given an offer that he refused. But let's see how it turns out for him. He fights really hard. He is a tough warrior, part of why he is who he is. But Oris Baratheon leads an army along with Rhaenys over to fight against his armies. In the scrum of everything, they had some setbacks, but eventually Argalak the Arrogant and Oris Baratheon fight in single combat, to which it was a good fight. But Argalak the Arrogant loses to Oris Baratheon, who was a great warrior as well. And his daughter, who was offered to marry Oris, ends up attempting to hold the Stormlands herself. She's going to do it. But she's betrayed. The soldiers no longer want to fight. They realize what they've gone through, and they basically take her to Oris Baratheon. But upon seeing her and upon the respect that he gained from her father during the battle, he frees her. And guess what ends up happening? They get married. So
of course
the motherfucker who sent back the hands would have just been like, yes, he saves all of this from happening. Like, this is what kills me about this guy, is what he tried to prevent by sending the hands back ends up happening anyway. His daughter ends up marrying Oris. And out of respect for the father, the daughter, the people who fought, Oris Baratheon takes on the sigil of House Dorradin, which, as we all know, is the stag, right? And he also takes on the words of the house. And upon hearing all this and having defeating the House Dorradin and taking, you know, Argella to wife, Aegon rewards Oris by naming him Lord of Storm's End. So this is formation.
Can we just take a second to talk about how the Baratheons just have like no creativity, and
because they took the sigil and the words.
They took the sigils and the words, and then when Stannis is in Dragonstone, I find this remarkable, like legit remarkable. When Stannis takes Dragonstone after Robert wins Robert's Rebellion and gives Dragonstone to the the heir, it traditionally lives in Dragonstone. Mm-hmm. Does Stannis do anything to Dragonstone? Does he make improvements? Does he No. Dragonstone is almost the same as when Daenerys's parents fled from there. Like what?
Yeah. Yeah.
These Baratheons are lazy. I'm sorry.
But I will say this, though, you know, the formation of House Baratheon being how it is, I mean, this guy came from being like, you know, the bastard brother of a dragon lord and was probably never going to be a dragon rider and was never going to have any like true inheritance to like, you know, I mean, and they dealt with things a little different in Valyria from what I understand, too. But he ends up being the head of one of the houses that is the old, like when we come into Game of Thrones, it's the house that's sitting on the throne. Oddly enough, kind of crazy.
A throne they stole. But anyway,
carry
on. Carry on.
I do like it. I do like one other thing too. This keep this in your mind, listeners, going into House of the Dragon, because I do think the Baratheons play a pivotal role in one of the parts of the dance that I will leave for a later time. We'll see how it plays out on the show, that I think is important just to know, to mark that here we are with the Baratheons being connected like through genealogy to House Targaryen. So at the end of that battle, he's now conquered the Riverlands and the Stormlands. So what's left to conquer? I guess, I don't know. I'll go over to the West. And in the West, you may have heard of this little thing, these houses, House Gardner. No, you never heard of that. Why? Because they got wiped out. All right. They fucked around, listened to the Lannisters, got all linked up with the Lannisters, went over to this little thing that you may have heard of called the Field of Fire. What is the Field of Fire? For anyone who is not aware, Think of Loot Train on steroids, where three dragons, not one, three dragons, light up all of the houses and destroy House Gardner forever. Like, literally ended the battle in less than 2 minutes, wiped them out, and named the Tyrells as the Paramounts of the Reach. And, of course, because the Lannisters are tricky tricksters, they somehow figured out a way to bend the knee in enough time where he would have kindness in his heart to raise up the Lannisters as Wardens of the West. Yeah, so that is now the West. So now we've conquered the Riverlands, the Stormlands, the West. What's left? The King of the North! Okay, so the standoff with the North and the Vale happens somewhat similar. So let's see. If you saw the biggest bully in all of Westeros, Harren the Black, get, like, totally trounced, and then you saw till he just melted Marshmallow Man, and then you got the Stormlands, the ass-whooping was so bad that, you know, at the end of it, they just took your sigil, your words, oh, and your daughter. All right, this is bad. And the house was like, we don't even want to fight those guys anymore. And then you just heard about the Field of Fire. Could you blame Torrhen Stark for saying, you know what? I think I'm just going to bend so quickly.
My knees would be all kinds of dusty. Like, I would be on the ground. Okay. Yeah, no, don't bring them dragons up here.
I mean, and we know the Starks are normally big on brawn and low on brains. So, like, let's call it what it is. Like, they're not, like, always the quickest. So give Torrhen Stark for breaking generational curses a little bit of credit here, okay? This motherfucker was like, no, I'm going to use my intelligence. The little bit that's been given to me by hanging out amongst White Walkers and Dire Wolves and Snow, okay? I'm going to bend the knee. I'm going to bend the knee. And he does. And because of that act, he is forever known as the King Who Knelt, which is referenced in Season 8, Game of Thrones, by Daenerys when Jon walks into the throne room. She talks about how their houses have been since the very beginning, together, and that she didn't understand why he came all this way to break faith. And he said, listen, you can't make me accountable for the oaths of my forebears, just like I won't make you accountable for the evils of your father. But then he bends the knee anyway, so who really gives a fuck what John is talking about, really, if you really think about it, like, honestly.
John bending the knee reminds me of what Maester Aemon said to him, which was that basically, I don't remember the exact quote, but basically, love interferes with duty. So anyway,
he does. It doesn't remind you of another kill the boy, let loose the man. Let me stop. Anyway, that's a whole other story for a whole other time. No, that is so. John's ancestor, Torrhen Stark, all the Stark's ancestors, Torrhen Stark, bent the knee, became known as the King Who Knelt. In the Vale, House Arryn mobilized their army. They're ready to fight also. But we see some things have not changed. Robyn Arryn was exactly this. We probably would have done this too. But the boy king, Ronel Arryn, sees dragons and he's like, wow, those are cool. And he peacefully surrenders.
You
in
know
exchange
what,
for a dragon ride.
You know what, though? He at least got something, right?
Yeah.
He's still the Lord of the Vale, and at least he got to ride on a dragon. What did these other folks get? Some of them got burnt up.
Some of them got burnt up. They're extinct. Their whole house, their whole line, done. Root from stem.
Yeah, I feel like he was a child, but he made the right decision here. If it were me, I'd be like, well, actually, I'm not riding a dragon, so I'm good. But, you know, maybe I would ask for something else. He got something.
I make the little man fly now. He did. I respect it. And I also respect the Arryns, because not only did they save everyone during the Battle of the Bastards, but they also were the last great house to surrender in the War of Conquest. They were the last. Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Well,
they
Martells,
were the last
but...
great house to surrender in the War of Conquest, if you stop the War of Conquest at that moment, accepting the fact that Dorne never really was conquered in the War of Conquest. They were conquered later, or they surrendered or joined the Seven Kingdoms later in the reigns of the Targaryen kings. But yeah, so I guess in the actual War of the Conquest, they're the last great house. But I always say that Dorne was the last house, really.
I think it should be noted that the fact that the Arryns didn't put up much of a fight was probably benefited their house in a lot of way, because they are like the Baratheons, like the Valyrians and the Hightowers. They're in with the Targaryens pretty quickly and regularly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Arryn blood mixed in with the Targaryen blood. And so it benefited them in lots of political ways, too, to not put up much of a fight.
Which is fascinating if you think about, which we won't go into detail, we'll talk more about it later. You think about the actual origins of House Arryn and beyond, like, Westeros, you know, before some of the people came to Westeros. So anyway, that's interesting. I like that fact, too. That's really cool. So that leads us to Dorne never really eventually just didn't come in, and Aegon, quote unquote, air quotes, decided to let them retain their independence. Yeah, okay, you decided that. They just were tough. They really were tough to defeat. They used guerrilla warfare tactics. They hid off in mountains and deserts. When they came to fight, they never fought it directly. They just found ways to kind of just constantly frustrate and deter the conquest, and Aegon and his dragons and his sisters and their dragons. And you know, I have the theory personally, you know, we'll talk more about this, that Dorne was that way because of their lineage, and how it was married into the House Martell and what happened. And I think that story may be told in 10,000 Ships coming up, another successor show. So we won't go too deep into that, because who knows? But I also think that they have a reason why they were harder to defeat. And then lastly, the High Septon. Basically, at this point, just declared the faith of the Seven would support Aegon, ending much of the last resistance to the invasion. Like, just said, hey, you know what? The faith supports this new regime, these new rulers, and everybody else should get on board. So what are your thoughts about the conquest before we move any further?
The Targaryens are colonizers. Like, let's just say it is what it is, right? Like, it is what it is.
Then the Fire Nation attacked.
They basically just come in and tear up a system that obviously was not working for everyone, but so in ways that essentially so that they could have more power and influence over the kingdoms and also the wealth. Some of these places are really wealthy, right?
Yep.
We know that the Reach is very wealthy. The Riverlands, they're basically colonizers. I do think that those who bent the knee were smart, because they had dragons, and you there's nothing you can really do to beat mm-hmm. a dragon. Like, the mm-hmm. y'all, Dany's dragons fell too quickly. Like, this is not, like, in the canon, it's actually quite difficult to take down a dragon. It can be done, but it's not going to be done with, like, swords and spears. Like, you it has to be strategic. Traditionally, you will need another dragon. Like, so I understand why they bent the knee. It was the smartest thing for them. But yeah, this is not, you know, Aegon is conquering people. They don't want this rule. You know, I think that in Game of Thrones, we empathize a lot with the North and the Starks, but they were ruling themselves for a very long time. They did not want interference from the South. And I think we just have to assume that's how everyone else felt as well. Like, who are these dragon lords who came from another place to tell me how to run, you know, my city, my town, my land? So, you know, I don't really have much else to say aside from this is, it's hard to, we're making jokes about it, but like, actually a lot of people died because the Targaryens wanted more power.
Yeah, I mean, I really do blame if anybody's got to go down on this, I really do blame Argylak the Arrogant. I mean, like, he had a perfectly good deal on the table. The deal ended up going through anyway, just he got eliminated, right? And I do blame, obviously I agree with everything you just said, but I do think that the appropriate response, right? Like, if somebody cuts off your vassal's hands, would be, okay, you've just declared war on us. But I don't, everybody didn't cut off those hands. This is like, it was a over, it was like such a big, like leap from like, oh, I'm pissed at you, to like, you know what? I'm gonna take all y'all shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a big jump. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy where he went in his mind, you know? But, you know, to that being said, at the end of all of that, he creates what is the Iron Throne by melting the swords of his enemies. And this Iron Throne, let's talk about it, looks a lot different than Game of Thrones' Iron Throne. That's gonna, the one that we've seen in House of the Dragon trailers, looks very, 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 very different, and actually looks closer to what I believe George thought the Iron Throne should look like. I think it looks great. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I think it looks great, and it looks far less comfortable than the seat that Joffrey sat on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Joffrey can sit on this throne, you know?
No.
I think it looks great.
No, he should not. He shouldn't have sat on the other one either. A little pain. And so, as we said, Dorne did not come in to the Seven Kingdoms during the conquest. And so in 3 AC, which stands for after the conquest, Aegon went and turned his attention back to Dorne. And at first he tried to get Dorne to come back into rule of the Iron Throne through diplomacy. That failed. And it forced him to, like, he said, okay, you know what? That's it. And he used force. Again, not probably, oh, like, they don't want to be ruled by you. He's like, nah, I'm gonna make sure I unite all seven kingdoms. And so he uses force here. But this did not work out great for Aegon, actually. The war lasted about 9 years. It led to some real losses for him. Orys Baratheon lost his sword hand, was captured and mutilated by the Dornish armies. And the biggest loss of all was that Queen Rhaenys Targaryen, who was beloved by the people, honestly, as well, was killed or brought down at Hellholt in 10 AC. So 6 years after the beginning of him using force, and Queen Rhaenys was brought down when Meraxes was shot through the eye with a scorpion. You may remember the scorpions from season 7, Game of Thrones, and also obviously season 8. They were, you know, bringing down dragons. But yeah, it was very hard to do. And the Targaryens basically responded by just burning every Dornish stronghold. Visenya and Visenya and Aegon went just full scorched earth, right? They did not, they were done. And this became known as the Wrath of the Dragon's Wrath. And and basically this went on for a while. And then when they couldn't win at that game, they decided that they were going to place bounties on the heads of all the Dornish lords. So in turn, basically the Dornish lord said, you know what? Let's try to assassinate Aegon. And it almost happened. In King's Landing, Aegon was attacked on 3 separate occasions. In the last of those occasions, Visenya basically saved him. And this is an important event because this actually led to the formation of the King's Guard. So the King's Guard exists because of this event, in which Visenya proved to Aegon that he needed security, because she was the only one who was fit around him to stop the attackers. And when he refuted or said, no, I don't need it, she basically took her sword and cut him a little bit on his cheek, showing how slow the people around him were to respond, to which he could not refuse anymore. And then the formation of the King's Guard happened. So that is like some of the history that led up to this point. And some of what, you know, at least, obviously there's other steps that we'll talk about between that. After his rule, his reign ended with his death from a stroke, and then his heir was actually came to power. His sons that he had from his two marriages, one from Rhaenys and one from Visenya. Visenya and his son was Maegor, and Rhaenys and his son was Aenys, which, you know, sounds like Aenys.
Or anus. Let's just get it out there. Aenys or anus. We're not quite clear how it's pronounced, but it's bad either way. Yeah, I mean, I think that we'll talk more about this next week when we talk about the reigns of King Maegor and King Jaehaerys. But I think that it's important to note that immediately, right away, as soon as Aegon died, the issues about secession came up immediately. Mm-hmm. This has been an ongoing theme in the Targaryens. They're never quite sure who should be the king next. It's not always clear. And it kind of reminds you of some of the discussions in season one of Game of Thrones, where I think Varys says this first. I might be wrong about that. But basically, like, power lives where people believe it lives. And so the most powerful person is a person that can convince others that they have power. Aegon obviously did this with might, right? And violence, using dragons. Maegor will do similar stuff. but it's never quite clear who's supposed to be the king or queen next. And I always just wonder, would life have been easier if they just kind of passed the throne to Queen Visenya?
You know, that's a good point. I don't know, because I think Visenya was also scheming and power hungry. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't think she was very loved by the people. I think Rhaenys would have been a definite good choice. I think, like, she just had, you know, she just didn't have, I don't know, Visenya didn't have the support of a lot of people. I mean, it's even later on when we get into Maegor, we'll know that, like, you know, this is, I mean, it's questioned whether or not she killed the king, right? So, like, she not Aegon, but, you know, Aenys. So, like, this is a problem. This is, like, people don't really trust her so great. So, but I think Rhaenys would have been a great one.
Before any of that happened, she did approach them and say, the secession's not super clear, so why don't we clarify it? Why don't we have Aenys's daughter marry my son? You know, so she didn't always want to be a schemer. She did try to go the diplomatic route, and it didn't work out. And we'll talk a lot more about Maegor next week, because
there's a lot to say. Whew. Yeah, there's a lot to say there.
Maegor was, I was a little speechless by the time I finished that part of Fire and Blood. I was like, I don't know what to say about this guy.
It's crazy. No, it's super wild. It's like, I don't know, the Joffrey and the Mad King with the dragon. Maybe even worse, actually worse. So we'll talk more about him. Let's talk about, you know, and we don't have to go so deep because this came out a little while ago, but What are some things that we picked up when watching the trailer? Like, what are some of the things that popped out to you?
I mean, I was a little stunned to see that we might actually get the Great Council of 101, which takes place at Harrenhal. I knew that we were going to Harrenhal, but a lot of stuff in this story, just like a lot of stuff in early Game of Thrones, takes place in that castle. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't quite sure what was going on, but it looks like we are going to get to see Jaehaerys, King Jaehaerys I, who is sort of the one who kicks this all off, but he is the longest reigning Targaryen king. And I'm excited about that. I initially didn't think we were going to get to see any of his reign.
Yeah. And I think it's like, there's a little bit of like, show change here that I'm anticipating, because I saw the still of like all the Targaryen Targaryen family standing behind King Jaehaerys. Mm-hmm. But he didn't go to the Great Council, you know. Mm-hmm. So maybe that doesn't happen at the Great Council, but he left it to them to decide and then give him the word, right? So, but that I'm here for the change, because I think it's really cool to like see him, you know, in the flesh and see all his family behind him as an older man, because he did so, we'll talk about him also, he did so much for the realm as we know it, when even that stand, him and his wife, you know, Alison and him changed for good and bad the realm, to the point where it's some of those changes lasted all the way till we got to Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? Like, so it's
yeah,
it's,
and they had 13 children, and the reason that this is happening, that the Dance of Dragons happens, is because basically none of those children either survive or are able to ascend. So it's like their story is very tragic, but I'm excited to see them because I'm excited to see Jaehaerys because he is probably like the last really good king Westeros had. And he didn't do everything perfectly, but you know, he really tried. He actually tried to be a good king, which is something you don't often see with the Targaryens.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, his reign is so long. I thought about it. I was like, how much are they going to put any of his reign in it? And I was like, man, it's 50 something years. It's like, it's so long. There's so much that happens. And when you read it in the history of Westeros, you're like, wow, there's a lot that happened. And then when you read it in Fire and Blood, it's really broken out into like all that happens, even down to like the relationship with him and Alison in detail. It's a fascinating story, but it doesn't have the same kind of like, it doesn't have the same kind of stakes, you know, like it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's Jaehaerys. It's like he's building the King's Road. Okay, yeah, that's great. But like a whole, you know, two seasons about construction projects really probably isn't that fun. You know what I mean? So yeah, the dance really was the right call, you know? So
yeah, and also like most of the story around Jaehaerys and Alison, especially in the middle of his reign, is mostly like just a tragic family story.
Yeah.
The kingdom is relatively peaceful. Obviously, it's not completely peaceful because it's never completely peaceful. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of tragedy that befalls their family. And it's actually just depressing. Like after a while, you just get sad because they start off so strong with such a strong love for each other and then eventually just lose almost everything. So I think that one would make for a fairly depressing family drama, whereas this is an exciting family drama. So, you know, I think it's cool to see them, but I also understand why we're not going to linger too long with the rule of Jaehaerys. I mean, I'm sorry. The rule of Jaehaerys.
As a counter argument, though, it could be Westeros' version of Downton Abbey.
It would legit be like... It would just be these people living their lives. There happen to be dragons. Tragedy befalls them. Like, it's pretty, a lot of it is pretty sad, but it's a little bit mundane at times. But they are the two, in my opinion, the king and queen duo that have the most influence over Westeros long term is surely Alison and Jaehaerys. There are other people. There are few couples that are so work so well together and do so much in the realm.
I agree. And I mean, and just to give Alison the credit and a shout out, like there's, you know, as we can see, patriarchy is one of the main problems that the realm has, and also the Targaryens have in figuring out their succession, because, you know, let's be honest, Rhaenys probably should have just become the actual king or queen.
Wait, which Rhaenys?
Rhaenys, the queen who never was.
We haven't mentioned her yet. That's why.
These names are
crazy. There's a lot of Aegons, Rhaenys, Rhaenys. We haven't mentioned her yet. But yeah, she should have most definitely been the queen for sure. None of this would have happened.
None of this would have happened if they just... And so, I say that to say that, like, you know, it's really interesting to me because I just think that Alison impacted so much with the limitations in place of policy, and it's also because of her relationship that she had a lot with Jaehaerys, but they were able to affect things that because she really listened. And I think they listened. And I think like it was they had some other flaws. We'll talk about it next time we talk about it, the episode. But I thought that was really interesting. Let's talk about the queen who never was. We see her in the trailer. She's talking about how, you know, Westeros will never accept a woman ruler. She's like, you know, asking Alison Hightower if she ever thought about sitting on the Iron Throne. Just quick hitter about the queen who never was in the trailer and anything that you want to talk about with her.
I'm just hyped about her. I love her character. She is such a pivotal and such an important character in the Dance of the Dragon. I can't wait to see one particular scene with her, which I won't share what it is because it includes a huge spoiler. But like her and Corlys Velaryon are just like a power couple.
Yes, they are. Indeed.
Like just the most incredible power couple. And I have to say, I don't know how the show is going to play her, but in the book, I appreciate the way that she understands she won't be queen and isn't salty that her cousin will be at first. Like she, even though she's mad about it, she doesn't hold a grudge against him forever. And so I appreciate that she kind of just like went about her business and her life until the dance came up. And then she was like, another opportunity for there to be a queen. I'm all in. So I really like and admire her character, at least as she was portrayed in the books. I don't know what she's going to be like in the show.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm really excited, you know, if they stay close to what's in the books. I mean, it's exciting. The whole, you know, Velaryon family excites. I'm excited for them. They play such a pivotal role throughout. I mean, since the beginning, right, of the Targaryen dynasty, like, you know, like even Aegon the Conqueror's mom was a member of House Velaryon, you know, on one side of her family. So she was also a Targaryen and a Velaryon. And so, you know, these two families have a long, long history of, you know, marrying, being close. Corlys Velaryon is named after the first member of Aegon's Kingsguard. The sea snake Corlys Velaryon is named after a Corlys Velaryon who was the first member of the Kingsguard. He was the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. So like, you know, there's a very clear connection. But I love the glimpse we see of their family. I love the family makeup. I'm here for it. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited, man. You know what? I'm here for some blonde dreadlocks. I'm here for them. I'm here for them.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Good.
I think we're both into the hype. Like, I think we're both in on this story.
Inject the dragons in our veins.
Yeah, just give it to us. Just give it to us. All I needed was that first teaser. The teaser that didn't even have any dragons in it. I was like, oh, okay, let's do this. I just think that it's remarkable that given how I think a lot of fans felt at the end of A Game of Thrones in 2019, how some time just passed and we're like, hurt us again.
let's talk about it. Let's
we're
just
ready
do
to
it.
Be hurt.
Let's just get it off our chest. Let's just do it because you know what? We're going to go into this thing and clean slate it. But you know, it's unhealthy to have repressed feelings underground that you haven't discussed or dealt with or unpacked. We're going to go down and we're going to talk about how things ended. Season 8, Game of Thrones, our general feelings about the end. Let's just talk about it. Let's just get out in the open. Go ahead. I give you the floor.
I'm pissed. Still. I'm still really mad about it. I don't understand why I can't let this go because it's been several years. I've done lived through a whole global pandemic.
Let's cut the ways. What do you mean? Well, you can't understand why. Bad plan. Danny's turn. Brand story is the most like underwhelming, but somehow the best story of all of us. John's parentage was like beat like a drum for like two seasons, only for it not to really fucking matter. Like, yeah, there's tons of reasons why you should be mad.
I just can't get, you know what it is? I think it all comes down to this. we really love this story. And yeah. I have made friends because of this story. I have found connection with people who I could not find other connection with because we would talk about Game of Thrones, you know, at the water cooler. We don't have water coolers anymore, but, you know, like at work, you know, everybody was watching at the time when Game of Thrones was like really getting big. All of my colleagues were watching The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones. The Walking Dead went off the rails and we all kind of were like, that's fine. We still have Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And we were so excited to see how this story with these characters that we loved and hated and felt, you know, mixed things about. Like, for instance, I was never a Jaime Lannister stan, but I wanted to see his story play out. And then what we got was Brienne of Tarth crying in her nightie over Jaime Lannister.
I hated it. Oh my
who
God.
Went back to his sister and were killed by stones. I oh just don't it, like the whole when you really break out like the little things that contributed to season 8 being so infuriating, they're laughable. But the larger problem was that they just skipped so much. They just cut their runway in half and they needed so much more. I need to understand why Dany turned. I don't fully get it to this point. I know it was foreshadowed, but in that moment, when Dany has won, when the bells are ringing in King's Landing, I would like to understand what it was that made her decide to just burn everybody. One episode before that, Dany was a hero. And then suddenly, because she has goes to a bad dinner party where no one's talking to her, and one of her friends dies, Dany's lost everything, so many things. Then suddenly, she's murdering millions of people. It just like doesn't track with how I think it could have played out. There is a version of the story where I would have found the end of the show completely believable, but this wasn't what they told me. And then Bran's powers, just like I to this day, I'm like, I don't understand what was the point of Bran having all of this foresight when he never used it in any meaningful way. I thought it was going to come up in the battle for Winterfell. Not really. Mm-mm. I mean, he just sat there, right? He didn't warg, you know, like there was all the speculation about warging into birds and using them against the Night King, and none of that happened. It was just sort of like Bran can see the future, but also Bran sometimes weaponizes it, and also that he can sit on the throne. And I'm still processing some parts of the story because it was just so deeply upsetting to me. And I know it's silly to hold a grudge this long, but I'm still really mad.
Well, I agree with everything that you just said. I mean, the redemption arc for Jaime Lannister, I just think that they should totally have reached out to Michael DiMartino and Brian Konietzko to find out how to do a fucking good redemption arc. I mean, you like literally Zuko is the perfect redemption arc. I'm just gonna say it from start to finish. Like, I hated Zuko, like, in the beginning. Like, did not like the kid. Like, but by the end, he makes the right choices, even though he has multiple setbacks. And you just thought that Jaime was going to end that same way, that he was going to make the right choices over time. And even if it doesn't end with him and Brienne living happily ever after and being together, I just feel like that choice felt so off from where he had been trending, from pushing Bran out the window, right? And killing Jon Arryn, right? Like, literally, we spent all this time with this person, went through all these trials and tribulations, him losing his hand, him doing some random acts of kindness for no reason, because he ended up being exactly who we thought he was when he pushed Bran out the window. And to me, that is like, that's the whole point. It's like they just missed the boat on that. The Dany turn, I don't understand either. And I really have said to you for 2 years how I thought they could have fixed all of this. If they had to make Dany go that route, it needed to happen. They needed to wrap up the Night King stuff in season 7. Had the battle for Winterfell happened in season 7, and we open season 8, episode 1, with having the funeral pyres and all that other stuff, and then we have a whole season to get to the political movements, the changes happening, seeing her like unfold. Then we could maybe get there by the end that she has a turn and just like wants power. But it doesn't track. And the other bigger problem that I think leading into House of Dragon that I think you and I have spoken about offline that I think they're going to have to address is in reading Fire and Blood, and maybe it happens, you know, in the second volume, the quote about the Targaryens doesn't track, you know? Like, I don't really think that it's about a coin flip and, like, you know, to see whether they're going to be crazy or they're going to be a good ruler or whatever. Like, the Targaryens are not, like, disturbed people. Some of them have evil streaks, but they're, like, you know, they're no more power hungry than anybody else in this story.
Yeah, I think that's the problem I have. I think that the whole, like, Targaryens are crazy because of the incest thing. I'm gonna give George R. R. Martin the benefit of the doubt that, like, the crazy he's talking about is the power hungry. But then when you look at what we know about the other houses, does that mean the Lannisters are also insane? Does that mean the Baratheons are? Like, I just think that I haven't seen it. When I finished Fire and Blood, I immediately said to you, okay, but who's crazy? Like, where's the mental illness that was so heavily foreshadowed and is supposed to explain Daenerys's turn at the end of Game of Thrones? It's not here. Now, granted, this is volume 1. They're supposedly, because you never know of George, man's working on a lot of stuff. Will be a volume 2, and maybe it will start to show, maybe it's a particular branch of the Targaryens, but, like, it just doesn't track, because as you pointed out to me offline, it doesn't even track with Aerys. Aerys was not demonstrating these issues until he actually was attacked and kidnapped, and he became paranoid after he suffered a trauma.
Yeah, agreed. Like, the real breakdown with Aerys is that he was jealous of Tywin. And he felt like people thought that he was more of the king. And it's just like literally just jealousy between him and his best friend, like best friend since childhood. And he was normally, it was just a normal kind of like jealous back and forth until like he tried to prove a point that he had better judgment than Tywin. And it went bad for him. They kidnapped him, trying to collect taxes, put him in a tower. One of the coolest damn stories ever. Like when you have like Barristan Selmy. We have Barristan Selmy, like, single by himself, rescue Aerys against a whole fucking army, because that's how nice he is. That's why that scene in Game of Thrones makes a lot of sense, that as an older man, he fell that way, but he would have had the confidence to take on a whole army because he had done it multiple times, right? And come out on the right side of it. But to see that, and that's when he goes crazy. That's when he becomes paranoid. Because he just, it doesn't know who he can trust because of the kidnapping. But he wasn't inherently, like, you know, had, like, that streak, a streak in him of mental illness or power being more power hungry than the rest or whatever it is. It's like, where they called him the Mad King. That's why it's all you hear people say, commonly known as the Mad King. Because he went that direction later, but it wasn't the base point. And I just think that, yeah, I don't think they've done the work yet. Just like I said, you know, because I keep bringing in, you know, what I was doing, this is equal opportunity. When I was doing Atla, I kept bringing in Game of Thrones. Just like we said that they didn't do the work. It's fine that Katara and Aang end up together, but we didn't feel like they did the work in between those last few episodes to get us there. They haven't quite done the work to prove to me as a fan, which is what, and suspend my disbelief, that the Targaryens are just inherently, like, more troubled than the rest of the people in the realm.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's just a lot of things that I find tragic about how the show ended. But I do want to note this. So I recently, in prep for House of the Dragon, started rewatching the show after many years, and you have tried to tempt me down this road several times, and yes, every time I've been like, it's too soon, it's too soon, I can't do it. And there's just so much about this show that is done really excellently, especially in the beginning. These are characters that I can't help but root for or against. And I think some of that magic will be back with this show. Yeah. But I just wish things had ended differently. I wish we had gotten the story that George intended us to have. And I don't think we got that.
Well, we are going to get it in season 9 of Game of Thrones. Snow's coming. And essentially, it's going to be season 9 of Game of Thrones. Like, everybody is like hitting up freaking, Kit. Like, hey, I want to be back in. Hey, you guys are writing this? I'll jump back. I mean, we got Maisie Williams is hitting them up. Freaking the guy who plays Samwell Tarly is hitting them up. So many people are like everyone's hitting them up. Like, we would be down to come back, which lets you know that we may just be calling this Snow may be season 9 of Game of Thrones. That's my take.
I'm going to reserve, because Jon Snow is a beloved character. I'm going to reserve most of my commentary. Actually, I'm going to refer to Snoop.
Oh, this bitch ass nigga done killed the queen, cuz. I'm mad, cuz. Burn his motherfucking ass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Snoop. If you want to know how I feel about it, go ahead and Google Snoop's reaction to the finale of Game of Thrones, and just consider that Snoop and I don't agree on everything, but we are one in this. Oh, that's how I feel about Jon Snow.
He killed the queen, cuz. Oh, no, man. Yo, oh, man. It's so... That's a great, great, great clip. That's a great, great clip.
I have like two Snoop clips that I watch like regularly when I need a good laugh. There's that one, and there's a one from the Olympics about the horse crip walking. And
that's great. That's fucking great. Good stuff. No, it's good
stuff. So I just want to say, I agree with you. I do think I actually think there's a lot that could be done for the story with the Jon Snow spinoff. I'm not there yet. I'm not ready to speak to John again. I think
and maybe that was intentional. And you know, when you think about the War of the Roses, they really weren't like a bunch of, you know, one side was bad, one side was good. You know, there wasn't, right? So, but in this story, so many people root for the Starks. I know it. And there's times where in my journey of being a fan of this story that I've rooted for the Starks. But when you look at it through another lens, right, you think about the fact that Sansa basically seceded from the freaking kingdoms to have her own kingdom. Ned had the whole understanding of who was the rightful heir based on everything after he actually overthrew the old king and kept that secret forever, you know, and even from his wife, which actually led to her making decisions that she probably wouldn't have made with that knowledge had he trusted her to share it. Mm-hmm. Arya becomes like, you know, a faceless man and, you know, is super murdery and only about revenge. And I love her. Like, just for the record, like, she's one of my favorite characters. Outside of Tywin, and Bran ends up sitting on the throne with having the knowledge of the whole entire realm, has enough wherewithal to be in a position where he does all the right things to sit on the throne. So there's another telling of this story where you could look at the Starks as supervillains versus like being the actual heroes, right? You could, like, if you're another house and you're looking at this, you're like, wait, so you guys move all the pieces on the chessboard to actually get in the position to be the winners of the Game of Thrones. So then what makes you worse than if Tywin or like, you know, the Tullys or the Baratheons or anybody would have figured that out also? What makes you better than them in that regard? So there is a telling of this when you look at it with the story that they told in season 8 kind of positions the Starks in a way that isn't so great as a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always said that if you just strip away brand story, if you take away some of the things that we came to love about Bran, Bran is actually a villain in season 8.
Yeah.
I mean, because of his inaction, those people in King's Landing could have lived and they died. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not convinced that part of the story was fleshed out. I think Bran is a very interesting character and has an interesting story in the books. Mm-hmm. Not sure that story made it to the show.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And that's why it's important to read those books. And, you know, listen, keep George away from Comic-Con. Never send him back. We do not need that man getting COVID again. Hope he's got a speedy recovery. Hope he's well. We need him hydrated and rested and in the land of enchantment where he's free and safe from all of those pathogens and weird shit. The man didn't even said, to his credit, he didn't go to set for all of House of the Dragon. He's been home working nonstop on the writing. I'm wishing him, I'm really rooting for him. I'm really wishing for him to finish Winds of Winter. I really do want him to do it.
So. I've already given up on Winds of Winter. I just don't believe it's coming. I'm doing that to protect myself because I've been hurt many times before.
You're like a DC fan out here right now. You're like, listen, I don't want to talk about these announcements. I'm not doing anything. This is rough out here for, hey guys, we feel you. We actually like some of the DC stuff as well. So love to you guys.
Speak for yourself. But anyway,
I mean, not the movies, but the characters. You don't like Batman? Come on. Batman is a great character. Come on. He's one of the best ever.
Again, I will reserve my commentary. But I will say this. I enjoyed Fire and Blood so much more than I thought I was going to.
Me too.
It is not a traditional novel. Yeah. It is essentially written as a family history in a history book. It is very, like, there are parts of it that are real page turners. I think that the source material gives the showrunners a lot to work with and a lot to build out from. And it really makes me excited about it. I actually think that this type of adaptation is better than an adaptation that is coming from a source material where the readers know intimately every single character and their thoughts and their motivations. I think that there's a lot to work with here. So I'm excited about that. And I'm glad we talked this out because I am feeling a little bit better. Like maybe I can leave my anger, my unresolved feelings about the end of Game of Thrones behind and just think about all the wonderful things that they did well. And I'm sure there will be things in this show that annoy me, but that's just like that's looking at art. Like, listen, art is never perfect.
It's so true, and I am too. I'm glad we talked about it because it does, you know, we want to come and approach the story like many of you with fresh eyes, you know, like with all the stuff that was there. And you know, it's hard because something will happen in this show and you'll be like, dang it, I hope they don't go that route again. And but you gotta almost it's good that we got all out of our system so we can talk about House of the Dragon and give it its due. It's a different show. They're going to try different things. And to be fair, again, to Game of Thrones, it's a show that brought many people together. Some of you that are listening to the pod, like full disclosure, some of you guys we know, like right in real life, that are friends and friend groups and different online communities. And we wouldn't know a lot of people and in that way and like form friendships beyond fandoms, right? Like beyond the fandoms, without having come together, like talking about this show and talking about, you know, talking about Potter, to be real, even though that has also disappointed us in some ways based not the story, but the creator. But the truth is that that's what these stories are here to do. And that's why we even want to have this podcast and talk about it, is that stories bring people together. They actually, you know, give us a chance to explore worlds and parts of ourselves. And to me, that expansive story over many seasons with complex characters and incredible production and all of that is what I'm excited to have back with House of the Dragon. And And I hope that, you know, that, you know, we're looking forward to covering it and interacting with all of you about it. So.
Agreed. I'm hyped. I'm all in.
Yep. Well, until next time, that will do it for us. You know, what do I say? Do I say tip your bard? No, not tip your bard. Do I say like, what do I do?
Wrong fantasy story.
Wrong fantasy. It has dragons though. It has. So, you know, until next time, leave your comments and everything on all the pod spots that you listen. Hit us up on all our socials, King Folklore Pod. And we will be back to discuss more House of the Dragon and be following the story as it progresses and all the news about the show. So we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.